Go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. This is the July 18th Special Administration and Operations Committee meeting of the Annuity and Pension Board. It is 11:04 a.m. Can I get a roll call, please?
Yes, Ms. King? Not present as yet. Mr. Klusman?
Here, and thank you, Madam Chair, for moving the time for me and everyone else for adjusting your schedules. I apologize. I don't mean to be a pain, but I much appreciate it. Thank you.
And Ms. Sawa?
Here.
Quorum?
You're welcome. And this is an important meeting, so that's why we did that.
Stupid dentist had to dig around in mine, so if I start to slobber, just let me
know. Yeah, I wasn't going to ask you about how that went, Tom, because it's very sensitive sometimes.
I survived, but if I bite my lip,
oh,
I probably won't know until later.
So our first agenda item is the acceptance of the Baker-Tilly 2022 financial audit. Do we need to go into closed session for this?
I don't think so, unless the auditors tell us there's some sensitive information they're going to disclose that's
I didn't see anything.
Yeah, I didn't think so either.
We don't have any such plans, so no need.
Okay. Then we will remain in open session and hopefully Ms. King can join us too. Okay, so is that Jason, are you presenting?
Yeah, both Darlene and I will tag team a little bit. So if you guys are ready, I'll start.
Yeah.
All right, well, good to be with you. I think it was back in March that we last got together to talk about, thinking about the audit and what we were going to do for the planning of the audit. And so here we are now, a few months later, with the conclusion and with the draft financial statement. So, you know, nothing really changed since we last met with you as far as our plan of attack for the audit, if you will. We didn't identify anything that caused it to deviate from our audit plan that we, you know, laid out with you when we originally met. I'm just going to briefly go through a couple of points in your financial statements, and then I'll turn it over to Darlene to go through some more information. So right now, your financial statements are issued in draft form. We intend to issue in final form after the conclusion of the meeting today and after you accept it. As you know, you do continue to issue an annual comprehensive financial report, or an ACFR. And I always congratulate organizations that do that, because you're not required to issue a financial statement that meets the ACFR requirements. It's a higher level of reporting, though, and so I always appreciate organizations that do that, and I want to recognize you for continuing to do that. You do prepare the financial statements yourself. Not all governments are able to do that, so congratulations on having the people with the abilities and the capacity to be able to put these large financial statements together, and we appreciate that as your auditors to show you really taking ownership of the information. Thinking about your financial statements, I'm just going to touch on the financial section of your financial statements. In there is our opinion on the financial statements. It's a few pages long, but really it's similar to the prior year in that it'll be an unmodified or unqualified opinion, the highest level of assurance that we can give over your financial information. And really what the opinion means is somebody can pick up, you know, the financial statements of the plan and evaluate and rely on the information in there in all material respects as they evaluate, you know, the financial health of the system and of the operations during the year. So, you know, so that's really what that opinion means. I do always encourage all people on, you know, the audit committees or the entire governing body to look at the MD&A, which immediately follows our opinion. MD&A stands for Management's Discussion Analysis, as you're probably aware. I know not everybody wants to read through the 100 and I think 50 pages or so of financial statements, but I do encourage you to at least take the time to kind of look through that, as it does a nice job of summarizing what went on during the year. Right after the MD&A is the meat of your financial statement. So, and I'll just talk kind of quickly about the financial statements. As you know, with all pension plans, the most significant impacts every year are your return on investments. Unfortunately, 2022 was a difficult year for investment returns. I was just at another board meeting last night presenting on a pension plan, and I was going over similar financial results where the losses on investments exceeded the both employer and employee contributions during the year, and you had similar results to the extent that your additions or revenues were actually in a negative position for the year. You were at $440 million negative. And so that obviously with your deductions decreased your net position during the year by a little over $900 million. So, you know, as you all know, investments fluctuate year to year, and we know subsequent to 2022 that we've seen the markets already start to come back here in 2023. You know, one of the things that I always like to point out, though, in the financial statements, particularly in ACRID, which have a lot of information but are in all financial statements, is back in your RSI, there's 10 years worth of financial information, and you can see 10 years worth of your net pension liabilities and the percent funding along with 10 years of information of your schedule of investment returns. You know, in 22, obviously, you had a negative return of 6.5%, but in 21, you had a return of almost 19%. So, you know, we can see that fluctuation on a year-to-year basis, and you can go back and look at that, you know, over a 10-year period. Obviously, your percent funded, you know, fell because of the investment returns during the year. You were at 93% funded last year. Now you're down to 78% funded. So, you know, hopefully we'll see that turn back around next year. Also in the RSI, the required supplementary information shows the employer's contributions over the 10-year period. I think that's always nice to see how those either stay flat or increase. And I know recently there's been additional contributions to the employer's reserve fund over the last couple of years as well. So, you know, the overall employer contributions have increased because of that. You know, after the financial section, because you issue an ACFR, there is the investment section, the actuarial section, and there's a small statistical section. I'm not going to go through those sections, but, you know, that does provide a lot of information to the reader of the financial statements. And I think with that, Darlene, I'll turn it over to you to maybe talk about some of the required communications quickly.
Sure. Thanks, Jason. Included in your packet of deliverables is a packet that has a bluish aqua color on it saying reporting and insights from the 2022 audit. This is our deliverable of our required communications. Our professional standards indicate that we need to communicate certain items each year to those charged with governance. And this packet is an all-inclusive deliverable presentation of what those required communications are. I'm not going to go into depth in page by page of this deliverable, but I just want to highlight a few important matters. The first one is Jason mentioned that the financial statements are prepared by management, and they're also responsible to formulate and supervise and oversee the internal controls of the organization as well. During our audit, we do take a look at the internal controls just from our planning perspective to make sure that things are operating effectively. However, we do not test internal controls, and therefore we do not put an opinion on internal controls. Again, we just take a look at it for operating effectiveness. In regards to internal control matters, if we did come across anything that we noticed that would rise to the level of communication here to this committee, if there was anything significant, we would have already communicated that with management and the chair. We do not have any internal control matters at this point to discuss with you in regards to observations that we made throughout our audit. As far as accounting policies, management is responsible for these accounting policies. They're also responsible to ensure that new accounting pronouncements are captured into the financial statement. This year, there was one new accounting pronouncement. It's GASB 87, which is accounting for leases. And this really had management take a look at their leases that they have and to determine if a lease is material. And what the standard indicated was if a lease is material and it is considered a contractual lease, we would calculate, or management would calculate, a present value and then also put a liability on the books, a lease liability, and then a right of use asset on the books. At implementation, which was the beginning of the year, there was a right of use asset added to the financial statements of just over $2 million. And the balance of that asset and liability at the end of the year is just under $2 million. So there was about a $288,000 amortization of that asset during the year. Included in the financial statements is a new note related to this. It's financial statement page 45. Note 10, so that will be new this year. That will indicate the background of what the ERS system does have for leases, and then also what interest rates they use to calculate their present value, and then also their future payment stream that they're required to pay under these leases. So if you're taking a look at the financial statements, comparatively, year over year, this footnote will be new because of that new GASB 87 pronouncement. For next year, there is one new accounting pronouncement that is pretty similar to leases here, which is GASB 96, which is subscription-based information technology arrangements. And this also will have management take a look at their subscription-based contracts and see if there's anything that they would need to put on their financial statements as well, similar to this presentation. So next year will also be another year for a new accounting pronouncement for management to take a look at and determine if there's anything that needs to be included in the financial statements next year. If you are interested in any other new accounting pronouncements, there is an all-inclusive list that's on page 28 of your financial statements. The GASB 96 is really the only one that's effective for next year, but it kind of gives a foresight of what's coming in the pipeline for you to kind of take a look at for future years. Anything in regards to the financial statements? Otherwise, I can move on to our additional required communication.
I do have one question, but I guess I think I can wait until after your required communication.
Okay. In addition to going through the new accounting pronouncements, policies, we're also required to communicate to those charged with governance if we determine if there's any uncorrected misstatements in the financial statements. And what that is that throughout our audit process, if there's anything that we found during our procedures that we felt should be included in the financial statements, but management did not include in the financial statements, we would have a listing of uncorrected statements. This year, we do have one. It's pretty similar to prior year due to the timing of investment. Each year, management has to make a decision to close their books and prepare the financial statements in order to get the net assets over to the actuary in order to complete the actuarial report in time. So management has put a process in place to do a cutoff. And after that cutoff, there are times where some of these alternative investments, which is private equity and real estate, the final values have not come in yet. And that is strictly just due to a timing basis. And based on that, investments that are recorded based on the final investments could go up or down. And this schedule of recorded, unrecorded misstatements is just that. It's just a timing difference of the investments of when we received the final audited financial statements and when management did their cutoff for the actuary report. This year, information that came in after that cutoff indicates that investments should really be approximately $8.2 million higher than what it's reported in the financial statements right now. And then also from last year, it was pretty similar, and it was a $10.2 million last year increase to investment. So we're seeing it pretty consistent year over year. In regards to finalizing the audit, as Jason mentioned, these are presented in draft, and we're ready to finalize the audit. at the end of these, at the end of this meeting. And in that, we'll have management sign a management representation letter to us, just indicating that they have provided all information to us, have given us all the information that we've asked for in our inquiries, and it will be included on the back end of this reporting and insight information when that is presented final. In addition to the ERS financial statements, we also do, we will provide an opinion on the cost-sharing employer allocation for the issuance of the single financial statements for specific elements coming up in the next few months, which is the allocation of the liability between each of the agencies in the plan. But that's forthcoming based on when we receive the information from the actuary. So that's all I have as a final required communications, and I'm happy to take any questions now.
Thank you. Does anyone have any questions? Okay, I guess I'll start with mine then. So I was wondering about the subsequent events. Did we, so everything that's going on with the sales tax, is there, did you not notice, I guess, what was the reasoning in not reporting anything on the subsequent events?
It's included in the MD&A under that last section, which is about things that are coming up in the future. You know, in particular, because there's a little bit of uncertainty as to how it'll all play out, along with the fact that it's actually going to likely cause additional revenue to the plan versus, you know, adding additional liabilities to the plan. We thought that might be the best place to place it. You know, it's still giving the reader information about what's coming up potentially down the road, but I didn't feel it quite met the criteria as a subsequent event.
Okay, it's just the last sentence somehow bothers me, that it was determined that no material events occurred, even though a material event did occur. I guess that's, I don't know, maybe it's just my brain because I'm involved in all aspects of this. I'm just like, you know, to me, to say that no material events occurred is a weird statement to me. That's just because what's going on is very material right now, you know what I mean, to the whole plan. And I realize, like what you said too, Jason, where it's not, everything is a little bit muddy and not super clear right now, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, for material or subsequent events, we really like to be really fact-based. You know, this is, this has occurred, and this is the quantitative impact that it's going to have on, you know, on the system. And we're really not there yet. And additionally, the quantitative, you know, how it will impact you is likely additional revenue, additional employer contributions, you know, which is only a good thing, you know.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
So, you know, the subsequent events tends to be more negative, I guess is the best way to say it.
No, I know. I get you. Yeah.
Yeah. We did still want it included, which is, you know, why we suggested let's put it in the MD&A. You know, there's a section for it, you know, within the structure of the MD&A that kind of gives the reader a clue as to what might be impacting you guys in the future, and includes them in at least somewhere in the financial statements.
Okay. Okay, did anyone else have any other questions? Mr. Mullen?
Tom, just to that point, I didn't speak early because I figured I'd wait for you, Aicha, to say something because you know this much better. But your point makes a lot of sense, so I'm just wondering if, since this is a draft, is it still open to, like, I agree with Aicha about how the it's such a harsh statement to say that nothing material, but we all know something. I think a very material thing is that the plan is now closed. It's now a closed plan, and that, you know, the funding is nice, but we should have expected funding regardless. But now I think we feel better that we know there's going to be funding. But I think that we were going to get funded either way, and it just might have been very horrific what occurred. But is there some way to change that sentence to say this new Act 12 has, you know, the plan has closed and a more stable funding source has been mandated by the state government, and we'll see how this plays out or something, and the results of that are to be seen or something? Is that like a or no?
I
think my recommendation, although we are, you know, it would just be to remove the subsequent event footnote altogether. There's no requirement that you have a footnote in there that lists out subsequent events if there are none. So if it would provide, so if we don't like that statement, it was determined no material events occurred, you know, could we just remove the entire note, thereby not disclosing or potentially confusing language?
This is Jerry Allen. Jason, I wanted to add something. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Aisha. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just re-looking at the legal changes paragraph in the MD&A, like Jason mentioned. And, I mean, it does actually say it pretty nicely here. Yeah.
So the plan is anticipated to close after December 31st, but the city still has to amend the charter to provide for the closure of the plan.
Right.
And the board also has to agree to it. And those actions actually haven't happened yet. The board will meet on Monday, as you know, to begin that process of deliberation. So I think Jason's right that it's not indeterminate, it's just that it still hasn't happened yet.
Right. Okay. I mean, I guess I don't know. I mean, maybe what Jason, your suggestion of just taking the subsequent events out, but kind of leaving that legal changes the way it is, maybe that's better? Is that what you were recommending?
Yeah, that's an option, because the standards don't require you put a note in there listing out subsequent events if there are none. I have a lot of clients where we do not have a note listed that notes subsequent events. So that could be pulled out altogether. That might, again, provide some clarity, because it takes away that sentence that says it was determined no material events occurred, you know. And then you still have the MD&A that has the disclosure there. Obviously, that's your call, though. I'll leave that up to you, whether you prefer that in there or not.
Yeah, I don't want to be too nitpicky. I don't know. I think just because of everything that's going on, it just, that sentence bothers me, that's all.
Yeah, I mean, I understand. Unfortunately, I'm kind of bound by our standards that, you know, we can't put information in the notes that I can't audit. And since we haven't had everything passed by all the appropriate bodies and all the legislation completely lined up, you know, I would fear putting something in there that may not end up occurring, potentially.
Yeah, no, I totally get, I understand, because we have the same issues on what we need to word on our end of the city, too. Okay. Did anyone else have any questions, or?
This is Ms. Chair, this is Molly.
Go ahead.
I'm not sure it's appropriate, but I'll ask. We had a settlement that was occurred in 22, I believe. And I don't see it in the financial statement notes. Maybe I missed it. Or maybe it's just a draft and that's why it's not in here as of yet. Just curious.
This is Daniel Pollan, here as Chief Financial Officer. We accrued that settlement in 2021 as part of our financial statements that ended in 12/31/2021.
That was a note, right?
Yeah, so we accrued that in our 2021 ACFR, whereas our investment team, they recorded it as part of their 2022 investment income or loss.
And there was a disclosure.
Yes. Yep, that we made the accrual.
And that disclosure was in 21, is that what you're saying?
Yep.
Okay.
So there's like a timing difference right now between us and the investment team, which will clear up at the end of 2022.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, are there any other questions? Okay, I think that was it. Ask all any other questions then, or anybody from the staff or the board?
Well, Daniel has a presentation.
Yeah, I was going to do it on the next item.
Oh, okay. Very good.
Yeah, that's what I figured. Okay. I think, do we need a motion then to accept the Baker Tilly 2022 audit?
Yes.
Okay. Can I have a motion to accept the financial audit?
Call for no motion.
Thank you. Second.
Thank you. Motion passes. Okay, then we can move on to item two. Thank you, Baker Tilly.
Okay.
Thank you.
The approval of the annual comprehensive financial report for the year ended December 31st, 2022. Dan, you're going to take that?
Yeah, I have a quick little presentation. Most of it was covered by Baker Tilly, so it'll go pretty fast. Again, for the record, I'm Daniel Gopalan. I'm the ERS Chief Financial Officer. Next page. Again, just repeating what Baker Tilly said, it was an unmodified opinion, a clean opinion. There's no major audit findings or recommendations other than that $2 million adjustment that we passed based on the estimated private equity in real estate. We received two awards in 2022 from NCBRS. We received that certificate of transparency because we participated in all their surveys and other requests for our public data. And then the GFOA certificate of achievement in financial reporting. We received it for our 2021 ACFR, and we plan to submit it to our 2022 ACFR and a GFOA for consideration as well. As you know, the GFOA award is it's quite extensive. They do a lot of work on that, so it's very prestigious award. Okay, next page. As Baker Tilly mentioned, we did implement GASB statement number 87 for accounting for leases in our 2022 ACFR. I won't go into detail about it because Darlene from Baker Tilly went into detail about it. And then we also disclosed the Wisconsin 2023 Act 12, the common council's 2% sales. It's on page 19 in the management discussion and analysis, which we kind of discussed just before. And then our investment returns were reported as negative 6.5 net of fees, and we beat our benchmark by 400 basis points. And in the past 10 years, we have generated annualized returns net of fees of 8.1%, which exceeded our benchmark by 84 basis points.
Mr. Jerry, I'd like to add one point to that investment performance item. The median outcome for public funds in the Callan universe was almost minus 13%, and our big sister fund in Madison was right at that. They were just under minus 13% as well. So we did about 600 basis points better than the median, even though you obviously can't take negative returns to the bank and buy, you know, or buy groceries with them. It's still on a relative basis was a good example of how our multi-asset class portfolio diversified against a very unusual investment period where both stocks and bonds declined sharply. Go ahead, Dan.
Yep, and then the fund's investment returns also rank in the top quartile of public fund peers over the 1, 3, 5, and 10-year periods per Callan's peer universe. And then we have paid out $3.9 billion in benefit payments over the last 10 years, while increasing our fiduciary net position from $4.9 billion to $5.5 billion. So we've been making over almost $4 billion in benefit payments, and we're still able to increase our net position from $4.9 billion to $5.5. And this chart just shows our funded status over the last 5 years. You can see it went up a little bit based on our investment returns, but in 2022 it dropped down to 78%, hard to see, I'm sorry, percent, and that was mostly due to the negative, the 6.5 investment loss that we had in 2022. So,
yeah, it's actually about more than a 13% swing, because we're expecting to get 7.5 every year, right?
Yes.
And we get minus 6.5, then it has that kind of a dramatic effect.
Yes.
And this is on a cash basis, it's on a market basis, in other words.
Yep. Okay, next slide. And then this just shows our contributions and investment revenue for the last 5 years. Our investment income is 72% of revenue from 2018 to 2022. It dipped from 82% last year, just again due to our negative investment return. Page. And then this chart just shows the growth of our benefit payments. They increased from 2018 to 2022, it benefits increased by 16.3%. In comparison, our admin expenses have pretty much stayed level throughout the 5 years. Okay, and just one final note. This is basically Baker Tilly's last financial audit for financial audit of us. They've been auditing Seymour since 2001, which financial statements were issued in 2022. I just want to give a shout out to Darlene Middleman, Carla Dogan, and Jason Coyle, who have helped us with our financial audits over the past 20 years. And that's pretty much it. Is there any other questions about the ACFA or my presentation?
I had a couple of like small questions, Dan.
Yeah. Or
maybe I could have the kind of feels like a stupid question, but in the notes under the description of the retirement system, like page 30, when it says general employees, you know, when it describes all the different types of percentages and all of that.
Yes.
Are the general employees, that's for all the agencies, right?
Yes.
Okay, I just wanted to double check. Because, you know, we always say general city from our viewpoint, so I just, when it says general employees, that's like MPS, MMSD, yeah. WCD, all of that, right?
Yes, correct.
Okay. And then, yeah, I didn't really, and then my only other question was, was this Callan letter that we had, did we have anything like this last year?
Yes. Yep.
Oh, okay.
Yep. It's part of our investment section.
Okay. We always have it.
Yep.
Okay.
It's part of the GFOA process where they want a, you know, a letter from our investment consultant.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Those are my two small questions. And then we talked about the subsequent event.
Yeah, and do we want to remove that from the ACFR?
I could be okay either way, so I don't want to micromanage the thing, so I guess I'm okay leaving it up to you, but.
Yeah, I like to disclose it just as full transparency, even though I can also see it does kind of, it could cause some confusion to the reader, so. Yeah, I'm fine with leaving it if the board, the committee is fine with keeping it.
Yeah, I mean, I could go either way. I'm, like I said, I'm fine with what you decide, so I don't want to micromanage the situation, so. I don't know if anyone else feels very strongly about it, so.
I think we'll keep it in because the auditors were fine with it.
Okay. Mr. Klusman, did you have any questions? Or Molly, did anybody else have any questions?
No, I didn't, and I'm fine with that. That statement to the lay people like me is confusing at times because you read one thing and then you read another and you're like surprised, like that you think you missed something, and we don't always read every word like all you accountant people do. So, but if it's not, I was leaning toward if it's not required, leave it out, because, but I think it's better, you know, Dan makes a good point that he likes to include more than the bare minimum, so I defer to his expertise on that, and if he feels good leaving it in, just leave it in.
I basically agree with, yeah, what Tom just said, and I agree. If that's what Dan feels comfortable with, I'm okay with that.
Okay, well, I guess we resolved that issue. Sorry that I created that whole conversation.
No problem. It was a good point to point out.
Okay, so then I think we just need a motion to approve the annual comprehensive financial report.
I'll make that motion.
I'll second it.
Thank you. Okay, so then moving on to our third agenda item, is the approval of the, oh, and thank you, Dan, sorry, I just kept talking, is the approval of the annual report of the Annuity and Pension Board's 85th edition, December 31st, 2022. Dan, are you taking that as
yeah,
well?
Yeah, I can take it. Basically, this is our annual little trifold that we send out to all of our members that receive a benefit. Usually, I'm trying to get it out in August, payroll. So it basically takes our ACFR and condenses it all into basically two pages.
Yeah.
That's why the print's so small. And I wish there was a way we could provide all that information without it being so tiny, but there's just a lot of information that comes from the ACFR and that's all, pretty much all that I have to say about it, unless you guys have any questions about it.
No, I don't. Does anyone else have questions?
Nope.
Molly?
I don't have any question. Maybe a little bigger font next time.
Yeah, and, you know,
that's fine.
Because we do We include it as part of our, you know, the direct deposit notices that the members receive. And if we go like more than two pages, then it gets a lot more expensive for putting that into our members' August statements. Yeah.
Okay.
I just think it's funny that we mail. It's good. It's good entertainment to mail retired people little fonts, they can't read big font, you know, so it just it's a nice little tweak for them, keeps them, yeah. Gets they all probably run to their in drawers and pull out the magnifying glass.
Yes.
We should shrink it every year and keep asking.
Go down to like a 2.5,
then they read it. If they can't read it, they read it, because now they're wondering what it is. If
yeah.
It's easy to read, they throw it down.
And we do get phone calls about it, too. so there are members that actually do read it.
When they call you,
probably
you should
like,
refer them.
Maybe
to
Wally?
Oh, I don't know.
I'm sure maybe Wally reads it.
Yeah, when they call, send them the full document and never call again.
Yeah. So I think we just need the approval of that. So can we have a motion for the approval of the annual report?
Tom will motion.
Thank you.
Molly will second.
Thank you. Alrighty. Moving on to our last agenda item, item four, results and approval of proposals to RFP for internal audit services. I do believe we're going into closed session for this. So please be advised that the Annuity and Pension Board may vote to continue closed session on the following item four as provided in section 19.851E, Wisconsin State Statutes to deliberate or negotiate the purchasing of public properties, investing of public funds, or conducting other specified public business whenever competitive or bargaining reasons require a closed session. The board may then vote to reconvene in open session following the closed session. So we need a motion to go into closed session.
Molly will make that motion.
Thank you.
Tom will second.
Thank you. And then can I have a roll call?
Yes, Ms. King?
Here.
Mr. Klusman?
Aye.
Ms. Sawa?
Aye.
Quorum, and if you say the time, I'll pause the recorder.
11:44.
Thanks. Okay.
11:59 a.m.
Thanks.
And now I think we need a motion to approve what we discussed in closed session, correct?
Yeah. Tom, a motion to approve the course of action that we approved in closed session.
Molly will second that motion.
Thank you for the second. So that concludes our agenda for today. And before we close out, I would like to congratulate Ms. King on passing her NCPRS exam.
Oh, very good.
Congrats.
Wait, what is this? It is the accredited fiduciary program, correct, Molly?
Yes, it is. It was not an easy exam, I'll tell you that, and I'll tell you I haven't studied this hard in a long time. But I'm applying to school. I realize I have a severe attention span issue going on, I didn't realize. It's over 100 questions in 2 hours.
Wow.
Scored 94, so
That's great.
Yes.
Yeah, I'll echo that also, because I've heard from other board members that have gone to that it's horrific, and it's far from the usual conference where you kind of just get to attend. It's far from quote on attending. It's very difficult, so congratulations.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Aja.
Thanks, everyone. So we will conclude at 12:01 and see you guys all next week at the Legislative Committee.
Thank you.